This is The Gaggle with David Helfenbein.
This week on The Gaggle, we have on Joe Connison. Joe Connison is a veteran political journalist, founder and editor-in-chief of The National Memo, and editor-at-large of the Investigative Fund of The Nation Institute. His articles have appeared in Harper's, Esquire, The Nation, The New Republic, The American Prospect, Politico, The Guardian, The New York Observer, and Salon.com. His new book is Man of the World, The Further Endeavors of Bill Clinton. We look forward to having him on. Thanks so much for coming on The Gaggle.
My pleasure to be here with you.
I'd love to start talking to you about the book, The Man of the World, The Further Endeavors of Bill Clinton. I'd love, if it's possible, to set the stage when Bill Clinton first left office. What was that like for him, and how did he first get the idea to start the Clinton Foundation?
Well, you know, as you probably remember, David, he was under a terrible cloud when he left the White House. He barely had one day off, or less than a day, after leaving George W. Bush's inauguration and going home to Chappaqua before the kind of roof fell in on him because of the Mark Rich pardon and other pardons. And then it sort of snowballed into a whole series of stories about how they had supposedly vandalized the White House and the Air Force One before they left and had supposedly, you know, purloined all kinds of furniture and other items from the White House. And a lot of this stuff was not true, as it turned out. In fact, almost none of it was true, but certainly not the way it was interpreted. But the Mark Rich pardon was something he did, and that caused a lasting damage to his reputation, although I explained in the book why he did it and the reasons, which had nothing to do with political donations from Mark Rich's wife, ex-wife Denise Rich. But so that's the scene. It's a dark scene. He's sitting up in Chappaqua. He's quite unhappy. He's isolated and somewhat depressed. His wife has left to go back to Washington to serve as Secretary of State. To serve in the Senate at that point and start her career as a senator, actually. She'd just been sworn in. And he's kind of alone for a while. So it's a story of how he kind of rebuilt his reputation and his stature from a low point when he had left the White House. It was amazing. When I went back and looked at the polling data for that period, he had left the White House with a very high rating. He had, you know, around probably better than Ronald Reagan, right in the mid to high 60s in terms of favorability. And overnight, it dropped to the lowest point since they started taking national polls about him. So it was quite a remarkable fall, and he had a lot of rebuilding to do. You know, the Clinton Foundation was something that he had started when he was still president to raise money for his presidential library. Like other presidents, had to raise a lot of money to build a library. And they all start to do this when they're in the White House. It's a practice that Republicans and Democrats alike have undertaken. But the purpose of the foundation changed after he departed. They still had to raise money for the library, and quite a bit. It turned out to be almost $200 million. But after some time out of office, the foundation began to take on some of the issues and problems that we know it has dealt with over the last 15 years.
What does your title mean, Man of the World?
Well, you know, he became a kind of global presence, David. He, over the years, when he was in the sort of doldrums that I was talking about a moment ago, he realized eventually, and I describe this in the book, that while his favorability was very low at home, or comparatively low, he had great prestige overseas. So he began to address himself to those kinds of issues.
He began in the very early on, in fact, when, and I talk about this at length in the book, around a week after he left the White House, there was a terrible earthquake in the Indian province of Gujarat. Killed thousands of people, you know, flattened many, many villages. And Clinton had had a close relationship with India in a lot of ways. He loved India. He had reestablished good diplomatic relations with India after the Cold War. And he had many friends in the Indian American community, which is, as I'm sure you and your listeners may know, it's a highly prosperous and successful community in this country. There are a number of very wealthy Indian Americans, and many of them are Democrats, and they had befriended Clinton while he was in the White House. Some of them became his personal friends. And he reached out to them at the time of the earthquake and said, I want help. You know, we need to do something about this. And the Indian Prime Minister at that time reached out to him and said, can you head up a fundraising effort for these villages, because we just don't have the money to do everything for them. And he did, and helped to found a foundation, which still exists today, the American Indian Foundation. So that was the first step towards rehabilitating his image. But he went abroad for that. They did a lot of fundraising here, but that was a project that he overtook when he was overseas. And it was very important for him to realize that in the rest of the world, he was still somebody that was liked, you know, admired, and trusted. And that was kind of the beginning of what he decided to do as an ex-president. The other reason is, you know, I've studied former presidents in the course of writing this book. And one of the things that in the modern ex-presidency they're supposed to do is not criticize their successor too openly. Now, Clinton broke that rule to a degree with Bush because things got so partisan. But in order to have a successful post-presidency, the thing that they do often is take up projects in other countries or around the world or international projects that don't necessarily impact on domestic politics here. So that's what Jimmy Carter did. And Clinton looked to Carter as an example when he left the White House.
I know you met with President Clinton several times to interview him for this book. What was the most interesting fact that came out of the interviews, or what did you learn yourself that you found most interesting throughout that process?
Well, I had, I'd say, more than a dozen interviews with him, and that doesn't count the many times I traveled with him to work on this book and talked with him, you know, sort of informally. I had at least 12 to 15 formal interviews where we sat down with the tape recorder, and those were on the record, and I used all of that stuff, or pretty much all of it, in the book. And there were a couple of times that I remember I came home from an interview with him, and I said to my wife, you won't believe what Clinton told me today, because I was kind of elated that he revealed something remarkable to me that I thought nobody knew about. One of those times, and there were several in the book, I mean, if you've read the book and you know there's a lot of new stuff in it, some of these things had been covered in the press before the book came out. One of them was his effort to stop the war in Iraq, stop the invasion of Iraq in the UN Security Council secretly, just before the war began, a couple of weeks before the war began, when he went to members of the Security Council, including the President of Mexico and the President of Chile, and tried to persuade them to support an alternative UN resolution that Tony Blair also wanted for his own reasons, that would have given more time for the weapons inspections by the UN inspector Hans Blix to be completed. Because if you remember, the U.S. invaded without this weapons inspections being done. Blix was left, had to leave. He was told, you got to get out of there because we're going to attack, and never completed his report, which was the whole purpose of the resolution that Hillary Clinton and the other members of the Senate had voted for in 2002. was to force Saddam Hussein to allow weapons inspections. But because it was becoming clear that there was that the report was probably not going to find any weapons there, Bush and Dick Cheney and others in the Bush administration decided to cut them short and go ahead and invade anyway, because that's what they wanted to do. Clinton undertook this kind of secret mission of trying to stop that, going directly against President Bush secretly. When we had that interview, and Clinton told me that, I was kind of astonished, because his position on the war publicly had been equivocal. He had said towards the end they should let the inspections be completed, but I had no idea, and I don't think anybody in the most of the world knew that he had done something to try to stop the invasion. Now, the other interesting part of that was I said to Clinton when we had that interview, you know, sir, that you were probably under surveillance by the National Security Agency while you were doing that. And he had no idea of that. But in fact, the British newspaper The Guardian and others had revealed that the NSA was surveilling all the members of the Security Council at the time of that debate, and including even heads of state. So Clinton calling them on the phone would have been picked up by the NSA and probably reported to Bush and Cheney. So he was surprised to hear that. And that's all in the book.
Very interesting. We don't have time to discuss everything, but just to mention two other things, if you want to discuss one of them.
Sure.
The statement that Hillary Clinton drafted to reject her appointment as Secretary of State I thought was really fascinating. And the other was the rescue of the two American journalists in North Korea. I mean, both are incredible passages in the book. I don't know if there's one you'd like to discuss more than the other.
Well, I think that people will probably remember when President Clinton went to North Korea on a secret mission to rescue Laura Ling and Yuna Lee. It was an inspiring thing that they did. He and members of what Laura later called the super cool team of the people who worked for President Clinton most closely, Doug Band, Justin Cooper, John Podesta, and other people who are characters in the book in that passage. And people remember them coming home. And there's, as you said, a very interesting inside story to that that I give. But I think Secretary Clinton, her decision not to take that position, which she then changed at the request of President Obama, is fascinating because of the way that the way she performed that job and its relationship to the Clinton Foundation is now being portrayed. You know, on the far right, and not so far right, they will tell you that, oh, this was all a plot to, you know, take over the State Department and use it to enrich the foundation. And there's no evidence that any of that is true, and I go through those accusations in the book. But the truth is, she did not want to be Secretary of State and rejected it. And I have in the book, you know, the statement that they drafted where she was going to explain to the public why she was not going to do it. The agreement that they drafted, the negotiations that they went through with President Obama, who insisted that he had to have her, because she was the only one who could take over that job at that time when the country was in an economic crisis. And that's an important story.
Two final questions for you. If anyone wants to write a book, how much work does it take, and what advice do you have for them?
It's really a lot of work. I worked on this book for 8 years, David, and I don't recommend that because then it works out that you're working, even with a good advance from the publisher, you're working at something like the minimum wage, so you don't want to do that. I've written several other books, as you may know, and I wrote them in much less time. I think you have to, it's not easy to get a book contract these days, even though we publish many, many thousands of books every year in the United States. But I think the important thing is to have a subject that really rips you, that you really want to write about. I think that's the key.
And final question for you, if someone wanted to follow a career path like yours, they wanted to enter journalism and they wanted to become an author, what advice would you give them?
I think, unfortunately now, it wasn't true when I started out, almost 40 years ago, but you have to, unfortunately, be willing to work at a very low wage for a while in the electronic media. sometimes no wage, I guess, to show that you have something to say and know how to say it. That is critical. If you can find a reporting slot somewhere, that helps. I think these days going to journalism school is probably a good idea if you can do it, but it's tough.
What advantage do you think journalism school would give someone?
I think journalism school, you know, I didn't go to journalism school, and I knew a lot of great journalists when I was growing up who were close to my family who didn't think there was much reason to go to journalism school. On the other hand, I've known some wonderful journalists who did go to J school. And what it does for you is it gives you entree to experiences in newsrooms and working for publications. If you go to a good journalism school, then the professors there usually are from media outlets themselves. They have connections that will help you find an internship, at least.
I know I said it would be the last question, but I am going to ask one more.
Okay.
If Hillary Clinton wins, what is Bill Clinton's future?
Well, he'll be what they call first gentleman, David, which is a new title. Nobody's ever been the first gentleman in our country before. And it will be something that he will, I guess, make up as they go along. I mean, I'm sure they're discussing now, since the polls look favorable to her, what he will do exactly, but that's not the first priority. He would say to me, if I asked him that question, I know exactly what he would say. We don't hang the curtains before we're in the White House, you know. That's like, it's called curtain hanging, and you don't do it because it's a bad practice and it's bad luck. You don't act like you've won before you actually win. On the other hand, I mean, looking at him and his career, I would say there are two things that strike me as possibilities, and this isn't based on anything he said to me. One is he's a tremendously talented diplomat, and I think everybody across the spectrum acknowledges that, which means that he would be a tremendous hand in the White House for a new President Clinton to say, I need somebody to deal with the Middle East. I need somebody to deal with, the Balkans that are blowing up again. I need somebody to deal with the fact that, you know, we have our relations with our European allies have been frayed in this presidential election. I mean, there are so many things that a new President Clinton could say to her husband to get him to help out with our position in the world. So, or specific incidents, you know, a natural disaster blow up, like the tsunami when he and the former President Bush took that on to raise money, and they accomplished so much. So there's that portfolio for him. And then, I don't know if you know this, but he is obsessed with climate change, and specifically the transition to a clean energy economy. And I know Secretary Clinton is really interested in that. It's been a big part of her campaign, and it would surprise me if he didn't take a part in trying to advance, our country in that way.
Joe Connison, author of Man of the World, The Further Endeavors of Bill Clinton. Where can people purchase this book if they would like it?
They can find it pretty much anywhere, I think. I mean, it's at your Barnes & Noble locally. It's at any good independent bookstore should have it. And certainly you can buy it online. And if you do and you like it, please post an Amazon review.
Fantastic. Thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you.